Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, Sally Murr. Thanks for coming on the Press Gazette podcast. You're a senior reporter, Milton Keynes citizen, and the reason we're interviewing you is because nearly 10 years ago now, isn't it? Or nine years ago, 2007, you were the centre, unfortunately for you, of a notorious case that became a real touchstone, really, for Press Gazette and for press freedom in the UK. And basically, the reason I'm interviewing you is because the whole issue that you were at the centre of around police use of surveillance against journalists has become extremely important now because the Investigatory Powers Bill is going through Parliament at the moment. And Press Gazette and the NUJ and News Media Association and others are desperate to get some protections in there for journalists and their sources, which aren't there at the moment. So you were arrested and put under surveillance under the previous bit of legislation that the Snoopers Charter, this new bill, replaces, which was the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act. And really, I just wanted you to, if you could, give us a bit of a reminder of what happened to you. Because under this previous bit of legislation, that was passed in 2000. And at the time, Jack Straw, I think it was, assured us that it would only be used against terrorists. It would only be used in, to investigate serious crime. And yet, in your case, we found out that it was used against someone who was just a local newspaper journalist who was speaking to sources, police sources, in the normal way. So can you just remind us, I know it's a long story, but just remind us, you know, what happened to you so that people can understand really what's kind of at stake.
Well, I was just pottering around doing typical local stories, and in May 2007, 8 police officers swooped at my home while, I think it was about 8 swooped simultaneously at the office, seized all my computer equipment, personal and work-based, searched my house, phones, laptops, took me into custody where I stayed for a couple of days, strip searched me. I honestly had no idea. They said the charge was aiding and abetting misconduct in a public office, which was an ancient bylaw almost, but it carried a life imprisonment. It was only later when they interviewed me, which they did copious times, applied for extensions, and played me tapes and showed me transcripts of texts, that I realised I had been under surveillance for about the previous 8 weeks, totally ignorant of this fact. And it was just a ghastly feeling. You interview people all the time as a local paper journalist, you know, burglary victims, rape victims, and they use the word violated. And I totally understand the meaning of that word now.
And that surveillance that they used against you was pretty total, wasn't it? I mean, what were the sort of things which they did?
They had a tape of phone conversations carried out during this 6 to 8 week period. They had photographs of me going into my house. So I think they must have had a camera. We think it was in the shed. They had access to every text from my kids. I mean, this was my personal phone. I very rarely used it for work. They scoured the work computer. They seized every notebook, absolutely everything, right down to the back of a fag packet I'd last written notes on. And basically investigated it for 19 months, trying desperately to find something to justify what they did. But in the meantime, I was treated like a terrorist because they kind of had to justify that. But in fact, the things they were investigating were absolutely bread and butter local paper stuff. The three charges had nothing to do with terrorism or anything.
And the crime that you were suspected of committing, this aiding and abetting misconduct in a public office, I mean, that was really, as far as we understand it, it was just sort of having unauthorised conversations with a police contact, wasn't it? I mean, there was no money changed hands, there was nothing untoward like that, was there? It was literally just getting information which hadn't gone through the press office, I suppose. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so. But you've got to bear in mind that the police officer and I had been in a former relationship for years, and we were still best friends. Our children were brought up together. It was that, but there wasn't really any evidence of it at all. But yeah, the accusation was that Mark Kearney was telling me unauthorised, very, very sensitive stories. And I was selling them onto the News of the World. So they scoured my bank accounts, Mark's bank account, absolutely everything. And there was absolutely no evidence. The last time I'd phoned the News of the World, I think had been 9 years previously, when journalists then were allowed to sell tip-offs and stories. They still are in some places. And the stuff Mark and I were talking about, I mean, 99% of it was just domestic fluff. How's the kids, etc. The stories that I was actually charged with were a local GBH who committed by a footballer. A murder of a local man who there was a link to cannabis. He was quite well known. His wife was the secretary of the then MP Phyllis Starkey, which I think the government had something to do with it, because in the police disclosure they said, this, we didn't want this story to come out because it would have been embarrassing to the government, according to Phyllis Starkey. Well, sorry, a guy's been murdered. He had a hydroponic cannabis factory in his house, and he was murdered over a drug debt, and he'd previously served a 10-year prison sentence in France for smuggling in hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of drugs, which I'd written about. So the stories were not only in the public domain, they were in the public interest. And indeed, that helped the case be flattened. But what is so scary is that they were allowed to authorise this massive power of seizure, arrest, surveillance under REPA for such trivial stuff.
You were first arrested May 2007. About 19 months later, we get you come to court in Kingston, didn't you? And then, you know, thankfully, obviously not before time, and after you'd been through 19 months of complete and utter hell, the trial collapsed, didn't it? I mean, what were the reasons for that? What were the reasons for it?
Because the police had not followed the freedom of the press, freedom of speech, Article 10, human rights, and they hadn't. There should be a very special procedure for journalists. You know, it should be in exceptional cases. They'd abused it. The judge said all the stories were in the public interest, public domain. I was a journalist, I was right to protect my sources, and it collapsed on the basis of that. And this is my biggest worry, that this snooper's charter will enable the police, the state, to just do this to loads more journalists. And I wonder what would have happened had it been brought in before my case.
And that's the sort of big concern, really, isn't it? So, Snooper's Charter, Investigatory Powers Bill. I mean, it has all these powers that we use against you in it. That's where they all are. And really, there's nothing, or there's very little in there about journalism at the moment. And I guess in your case, fortunately, the judge finally saw sense. But you know, very late on, and by that stage, the damage had been done, hadn't it, as far as you were concerned?
Emotionally, and the damage between the relationship between police and journalists generally. But he you know, primarily the case dropped because it was felt the police has had misused their powers, wrongly used their powers. If this charter's passed, will it condone the use of those powers, and could journalists be sent to prison?
Yeah, what are your feelings now about this as it goes through Parliament, and what's the sort of you know, the message you like to get out there in terms of the concerns that you have as someone who's been subject to this sort of surveillance?
It absolutely terrifies me, Dominic. And I know what I went through, and I'm no wimp, but you saw me at that time. I think you'll vouch for how it just destroyed everything, my life, my family, my kids, everything. I just think everybody who cares about journalism, whether they're a journalist or not, must sign this petition and just circulate it around the world. This has to be stopped. It has to be stopped. It's the death knell for journalism, for freedom of speech. The relationship between journalists and police is already so atrocious that we are basically, they treat us like a PR department. We are allowed to know the same information as the public. We're not encouraged to investigate. This will just ruin everything. And you are so right to try to stop it.
Yeah, so this is the Press Gazette petition, which I think you've signed, and I hope many more people do sign, just basically saying that, you know, please, let's get an amendment through, which says, you know, use these powers for sure against terrorists, serious criminals, but don't use them against law-abiding journalists like you or me. And so what now? I mean, you know, 9 years on, I mean, I remember at the time you were questioning whether or not you'd go back into journalism. Was it tough to go back into journalism after everything? For a while you were questioning whether or not to do it, weren't you?
Yeah, the company was great. I mean, it's just a little local paper, Dominic. I've never worked outside Milton Keynes. It's actually been 41 years now working the same patch. I was encouraged to come back. It's fine. I still cannot walk into a police station. I never went to collect all my seized phones, computers, laptops, even the work computer. I couldn't face going back. I will do police stories, but they terrify me, and that is crazy. It's affected me badly, but I am still working more or less and functioning normally as a journalist and enjoying it and feeling passionately about this.
Yeah. And do you take any precautions, any sort of special precautions now in terms of technology and, you know, sources and so on?
Oh, God, to the point where people will probably think I'm crazy. My phone is a 7-year-old Nokia that doesn't even have a camera, let alone internet access. I just send texts and calls. I don't really talk on the phone much. I have a really basic laptop at home with really no facilities to do anything at all apart from write on and look at emails and stuff. I go through my Google history after every use and delete it. It's such paranoia. But having sat there for 12 hours, time and time again in interview, and heard texts, read out to me texts from my daughter saying, "Mummy, what time are you going to pick me up today?" Just that feeling of violation that they can go in and just analyse every single thing, not just about your work. We're a different person, but different people when we're at work. But your private life, and having it just laid out in disclosure documents of hundreds of pages, it's not good. So yeah, I'm paranoid. I'm an absolute technophobe. I don't even keep notebooks. I destroy them, which is probably against the law.
Yeah, that's cautious though. And the this is the final thing, really. So 9 years on, I remember, you know, the time you telling us all the things you went through. I think you were held for 19 hours at one point, weren't you? And strip search and all sorts of terrible things happened to you. And did you ever get any apology or look at compensation or anything from, you know, Thames Valley Police? Any comeback? Any acknowledgement that maybe they got it wrong?
No. At the time, I just felt it would be filthy money and I didn't want to. I couldn't face another court battle. I think a polite request was made by the barrister. Look, can we talk compensation? They said, no, we've absolutely done nothing wrong, even though they had misused REPA.
Yeah.
A few years later, about 2 or 3 years later, there was a steady stream of prosecutions from Woodhill Prison, which is where they reckoned the leaks were from. Mm. And that was the reason for my arrest, which is quite a heavy terrorist prison. Mm. And they prosecuted, I think, 4 or 5 other prison members and had direct proof that they'd sold stories to the Nationals. Mm. So I did go back about 4 or 5 years ago and said, look, you've done all these prosecutions. Some of these stories that you're talking about selling, it was the Soham murders, etc.
Yeah.
Because Huntley was in Woodhill. You accused me of an interview. Now you've admitted that it wasn't me by arresting someone else. Can we talk compensation? They just said you're too late. You need to make a special case to the IPC, which I did.
Yeah.
And no, it was refused. And I thought, you know what? I just need to get on with my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Well, it's good to see you doing that, Sally. And brilliant. Great to speak to you again. And thanks for supporting the petition.
Thank you, Dominic.
Okay. Cheers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.